Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Chico City Council meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, coverage of the Paradise Town Council meeting by Maddie Vannucci, a recap of the recent cleanup efforts in Bidwell Park by Hope Brianna Campbell, an update on Big Chico Creek by Maddie Vannucci, and news releases by David Foose.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. A proposal that could change the way people experience downtown Chico and Merriam Park is on the agenda this week. Council members will consider item 5.1, the introduction and first reading of an ordinance that would establish designating entertainment zones under California's Senate Bill 969. The state law signed last year allows cities to create specific areas where adults 21 and older can purchase an alcoholic beverage from a participating restaurant, brewery, or bar and carry it outdoors within clearly marked boundaries. The idea is to encourage people to walk between businesses, enjoy community events, and spend more time in commercial districts while still following rules established by the city. City staff say the ordinance is intended to support economic development by creating a more inviting atmosphere for residents and visitors. Business owners have long looked for ways to increase foot traffic, particularly during community events, live music, and festivals. Supporters believe entertainment zones could encourage people to explore more of downtown rather than staying at a single location. Eric Gustafson states at the Chico City Council meeting.
So here we are introducing an ordinance to layer in an entertainment zone in downtown Chico Merriam Park. So quick overview, what is it? We're gonna talk about the legislature that allows it, the reasoning to do it here in Chico. The boundaries, rules will end on a timeline. So entertainment zone, it's a designated area established by a municipality, whether it's a city or a county, where adults age 21 and over may legally possess and consume alcoholic beverages purchased from participating in licensed businesses while walking within a specified area of public right-of-way. The zone operates only within the defined boundaries, established days, hours, and conditions established by the ordinance. So basically, customers can purchase a drink from a licensed, an ABC, Alcoholic Beverage Control, licensed participating bar or restaurant, carry that beverage outside within the designated zone in an approved container, and socialize, walk, and the hope is to shop a little bit extra within the zone. Alcohol cannot be brought in from outside of the zone or taken beyond its boundaries. Really, the reasoning is to assist the downtown area and Merriam Park in creating an experience.
Because this is the ordinance's first reading, the council is expected to introduce the measure, hear comments from the public, and decide whether to move it forward. If approved, it would return at a future meeting for a second reading and final consideration before taking effect. The council's debate will help shape how downtown Chico and Merriam Park continue to evolve as destinations for dining, shopping, and community events. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News. Big Chico Creek has shown no signs this year of E. coli 0157, the strain responsible for multiple illnesses linked to the creek during the summer of 2025. According to an Enterprise Record article by Nate Giacchese, Butte County Public Health collected water and sediment samples from Big Chico Creek on May 4th and June 8th to test for E. coli 0157. As a result, the department does not plan to continue testing for the strain unless new illnesses are reported. Instead, Butte County Public Health has shifted its focus to monitoring general E. coli levels, according to Enterprise Record reporter Michael Weber. In an interview with Enterprise Record, Butte County Public Health Officer Dr. Jarrett Beaudoin said the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and California State Water Resources Control Board recommend universal thresholds for general E. coli in recreational waterways. However, there are no regulatory requirements requiring these cities and county to maintain bacteria levels below those recommendations. Weber reported that the state and federal thresholds are based on averages from rivers and creeks across the country. A baseline specific to Big Chico Creek has not yet been established. According to the City of Chico's official 2026 Sycamore Pool Water Quality Monitoring Report, E. coli readings at the upstream Sycamore Pool site measured 261, while readings at the downstream site measured at 167 on July 13th. Levels above 100 indicate elevated bacteria concentrations, and swimmers are advised to use caution. Chiaki's reported that if E. coli levels reach 320, public officials recommend avoiding contact with the water altogether. While most strains of E. coli found in natural waterways are harmless, elevated levels can indicate the presence of other bacteria, viruses, or parasites that may increase the risk of illness. The City of Chico and Butte County Public Health recommend the following precautions when visiting Big Chico Creek recreation areas. Avoid swallowing creek water. Closely supervise babies and toddlers who are more likely to swallow water accidentally. Wash your hands before eating or drinking after swimming. Rinse off with clean water after leaving the creek. Do not swim if you have open wounds or have diarrhea within the past 2 weeks. Use properly fitted swim diapers for children who are not yet potty trained. Officials remind residents that swimming in natural waterways always carries some level of risk, particularly for young children, older adults, and people with weakened immune systems. As the summer recreation season continues, Butte County Public Health will continue monitoring reports of illnesses that may be linked to recreational water use, even though testing for E. coli 0157 has concluded. Residents can check current water quality conditions before visiting Sycamore Pool through the City of Chico's online water quality monitoring dashboard, where E. coli results are updated throughout the swimming season. Officials encourage swimmers to pay attention to posted advisories and avoid entering the water if bacteria levels exceed recommended thresholds. With Zephyr News, this has been Maddie Vannucci.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. One of Chico's most valued public spaces got a helping hand this week, as local high school students spent part of their summer cleaning up Lower Bidwell Park. According to the Chico Enterprise Record, students participating in Chico State's Upward Bound Summer Program joined city park staff for a day of community service focused on improving the park's landscape and removing debris. Stated in the Chico Enterprise Record by Nathan Chio Chios, Meyer Yang, a program advisor with Upward Bound, said Upward Bound is in the middle of a six-week summer program, which brings together high school students to Chico State, where they stay in the dorms, go to class, and experience a taste of college life. She added that the Bidwell Park cleanup is part of that program. Nearly 170 students took part in the effort, spreading across different sections of Lower Bidwell Park. Their tasks include pulling weeds, clearing dead vegetation, collecting branches, and hauling away green waste. The work may have been physically demanding, but organizers say it also gave students a chance to learn about environmental stewardship and the importance of caring for public spaces. Bidwell Park is one of the largest municipal parks in California, and maintaining it requires ongoing attention throughout the year. City crews handle much of the routine maintenance, but volunteer efforts like this provide valuable support, especially during the busy summer season when the park sees heavy use from hikers, cyclists, families, and visitors. Organizers say the goal is not only to help students succeed in higher education, but also to encourage them to become engaged members of their communities. For many of the students, the project offered a different perspective on a park they may have visited for years. Instead of simply enjoying the trails or creek areas, they spent the day helping maintain them. That hands-on experience can create a stronger connection between young people and the natural spaces around them. The event also highlights a long tradition of volunteerism in Chico. Community organizations, schools, and local residents regularly participate in park cleanups and restoration projects throughout the year. Those efforts help preserve the natural character of Bidwell Park while keeping it accessible for thousands of people who use it each week. City officials are encouraging residents to do their part by properly disposing of trash, staying on designated trails, and respecting park regulations. They say protecting Bidwell Park is a shared responsibility that benefits the entire community. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Maddie Vinici with Zephyr News. Presentations from the Paradise Ridge Chamber of Commerce, Paradise Performing Arts Center, Theater on the Ridge, Paradise Art Center, Gold Nugget Museum, and the Paradise Symphony highlighting the third year of the Transient Occupancy Tax Reinvestment Program opened the July 14th Paradise Town Council meeting. The Paradise Ridge Chamber of Commerce was the first organization to present, outlining how its allocated funds have been used to attract new residents and homebuyers to the community. Executive Director Monica Nolan said the Chamber has worked to position Paradise as a competitive choice for prospective residents through a year-round marketing campaign focused on quality of life, outdoor recreation, community spirit, and rebuilding efforts. The campaign, titled Piece of Paradise, was designed to encourage people to envision themselves living in Paradise. Rather than simply telling people about Paradise, we wanted them to imagine themselves living here, Nolan said. The Chamber's marketing efforts include search engine advertising targeting people researching relocation, website retargeting, targeted email campaigns, addressable television advertising, display advertising, and Meta-sponsored ads. Nolan said each advertising method reaches roughly 25,000 people, with an average view rate of 20.83% and a click-through rate of 2.11%. There was an average of 10,000 impressions every day during the month of June, Nolan said. Nolan thanked the council and said, "This campaign is producing promising early results, but resident attraction is not a one-year project." Kelly Connor, representing Paradise Performing Arts Center, said the funding has allowed the organization to expand both its performances and marketing efforts. According to Connor, 30% of tickets sold this year were purchased by people outside of Paradise. The organization's goal is to establish Paradise as a destination for performing arts while encouraging visitors to stay overnight and support local businesses. Funds were primarily used for artist performances, performer lodging, television and radio advertising, and promotional materials. Every performance brings people into Paradise who dine at our restaurants, shop at our stores, and experience firsthand the progress that our community has made, Connor said. Kathleen Dicer, chair of Community Outreach Committee for the Paradise Arts Center, said the organization is experiencing record attendance. "The attendance we received now is higher than it has ever been in the past 60 years," Dicer said, adding that an increasing number of young artists are expressing interest in exhibiting their work in the museum. The Gold Nugget Museum also provided an update, explaining that the museum remains in the midst of repairs and requested additional time to complete its audit detailing how these funds are being spent. Executive Director Mark Thorpe emphasized the importance of preserving arts and cultural programming in Paradise. "It is important for the school program to return. It's important for the Tales of the Ridge to come back. It's important for the days of living history to return to our community, Thorpe said. Paradise Symphony Treasurer Esther Tiedemann said the symphony hosts two major performances each year and continues to draw audiences from across the region. Approximately half of this year's audience traveled from Chico, while others attended from Yuba City, Marysville, Oroville, and other surrounding communities. We hope to make the July 4th Symphony a go-to destination, Tiedemann said. The final presentation came from Theater on the Ridge Executive Director Judy Flemons, who said the organization's youth programs have benefited significantly from the council's investment. Flemons noted that their youth center has benefited greatly from the funds given by the Paradise Town Council. Additionally, the funding has allowed the theater to rent additional performance spaces, expand advertising efforts, and increase financial assistance for students. We were also able to afford a total of 20 scholarships this year, Flemons said, up from 6 scholarships in 2025 and 2024. This has been Maddie Vannucci with Zephyr News.
This is David Foos reporting for Zephyr News. Butte County announced the availability of Alert FM emergency notification receivers for eligible community members. These receivers are designed to deliver emergency alerts issued by the Butte County Sheriff's Office utilizing existing FM radio signals without relying on electricity or cellular service. Each receiver operates on micro USB power with a single AA battery backup. Alert FM receivers will be provided free of charge on a first-come, first-served basis to eligible community members. Residents must apply in person in Oroville on certain dates. For details, visit the Butte County Alert FM webpage. The Butte County Air Quality Management District is accepting applications through August 14th for three different clean air programs. The Wood Smoke Reduction Program is intended to replace older wood-burning stoves or fireplaces with new wood, pellet gas, or electric options. The Lawn and Garden Equipment Program offers applicants the opportunity to replace diesel and gasoline-powered landscaping equipment, such as chainsaws, trimmers, edgers, mowers, and blowers, with new cordless battery-powered versions. The Community Air Protection support grants are for Butte County organizations, nonprofits, businesses, and public agencies to propose an air quality project valued up to $10,000 that can benefit the local community. Applications are available at the district office or online at butteairquality.com. Butte County held a groundbreaking ceremony Tuesday for a new probation department building in Oroville. As part of the ceremony, music played while a part of the old building was demolished. Modern Building is on an 18-month contract to build the new building, which will cost $13 million, some of which is coming from PG&E settlement funds. The Town of Paradise is removing trees along Nunnally Road west of Clark Road to address significant sidewalk damage and improve pedestrian safety. Habitat for Humanity of Butte County announced that they completed their first one-bedroom build in Paradise, planned to be the first of many to accommodate single older adults in the community. There will be a home dedication the morning of August 1st on Pinecrest Drive in Paradise. And finally, the Community Action Agency of Butte County will hold a tailgate food distribution event Friday, July 17th, 2026, at the Megalia Community Church from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. or until supplies run out. The effort is conducted at no cost to those attending. Attendees should be in a vehicle and follow traffic flow guides. This is David Foos for Zephyr News.
From KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Alex Hall in San Francisco. Peach farmers in the Central Valley have had to pull their crops and are facing financial hardship. North State Public Radio's Claudia Brancart says they're hoping a new farm bill will help keep them going.
It's a sweltering morning in June as Sarb Joel watches an excavator push dead peach trees into ginormous dry piles.
He's picking up the trees already been pushed out of the ground. He's piling into a pile so they could be burned.
Like a lot of farmers in Yuba and Sutter counties, Joel grows peaches. Not the kind that you buy fresh at the store. These peaches are grown for canning. Think school lunches. But Joel was forced to rip out over half of his peach acres after Del Monte Foods, one of the last canneries that processed peaches, filed for bankruptcy and then closed earlier this year. That left growers like Joel without a buyer for their fruit.
You know, when the processor goes out, basically you got no place to go.
But in April, the USDA threw them a lifeline. It created a $9 million program to fund the removal of thousands of acres of trees. Now, peach farmers need to invest in growing another crop, and they're hoping the new farm bill will provide some help. But it may not be all that simple. James Sayer is an agricultural economist at UC Davis.
So historically, the farm bill has left out specialty crop growers.
Specialty crops are basically fruits, like peaches and nuts and vegetables. And Sayer says they've gotten the short end of the stick when it comes to the farm bill. That's because a lot of the bill is dedicated to Title I crops. Think big commodities like corn, wheat, and soybeans. The bill has supported Title I crops with things like insurance programs and direct payments to farmers when prices fall.
The upshot is that if you are a specialty crop grower, you basically didn't have access to many of these programs.
Sayer says that's partially because Title I crops are grown in Midwestern states, while specialty crops are concentrated in California.
You think about the Midwest in terms of how many senators they have. Let's call it somewhere between 12 to 20 senators.
Whereas California has only two, giving it less political power. One silver lining, California Senator Adam Schiff has a seat on the Senate Agriculture Committee. It's the first time in 30 years that a lawmaker from the Golden State is at the table. Schiff says one of his main priorities is to get more resources for specialty crops.
There's no reason to treat these farmers differently than we treat farmers in other parts of the country that grow different crops.
But getting a new farm bill across the finish line has gotten more difficult since H.R. 1, the federal budget package that significantly cut the food assistance program known as SNAP. Schiff says Democrats want to see those cuts reversed in the next farm bill.
If Republicans are willing to meet us, then I think we have a farm bill.
But farmers like Joel can't wait around for the politicians to act. Back at the farm, Joel says giving up peaches would be giving up a piece of his family heritage. Joel's dad immigrated from Punjab, India in the 1960s and worked at a peach farm in Yuba City. From there, he bought his own ranch.
He had a love for peaches, and so that got passed on to the next generation.
And Joel hopes the new farm bill will include more support for specialty crop farmers, so maybe his kids can grow peaches.
There's always a better day tomorrow. Live by, hey, tomorrow's gonna be a better day. Next year's gonna be a better season.
And Joel says maybe in the future, he can plant some more peach trees. For the California Report, I'm Claudia Brancart in Marysville.
Close to 200 years ago, people from all over the world flocked to California's rivers in search of gold. This year, they're back at it, hoping that with the price of gold trending upward in the last year or so, they might just get lucky. But is it really that easy? KQED's Catherine Monahan went into the heart of the gold country, to the Yuba River, to talk to some old-time prospectors and some newbies.
Gold fever is a real thing.
Kobe Thomas is a sixth-generation gold miner. His great-great-great-grandfather came out with the California Gold Rush in 1849, and the family's been in the industry ever since.
It's so addictive. You just want to go do it again and again.
He digs up some promising-looking dirt from the riverbank and shakes it around in a special plastic pan.
The key is stratifying, getting the gold to go through all the way to the bottom. And then wash that light stuff off the top.
And after several minutes of careful swishing, a few glimmers start to reveal themselves.
Everything's fairly small. There's a lot of it.
Not far away, Thomas's friend Brian Puckett is finishing up his own pan. He's swirled it down to specks of gold against a background of black sand.
Look at that. It's like a constellation of stars.
Puckett, by the way, is buck naked right now, as are some of the other characters lounging around this turquoise pool on the Yuba River.
And it's really a nice rhythm. You know, it's very relaxing.
But the atmosphere is changing on the river. After the price of gold shot up to an all-time record toward the beginning of this year and has been holding far above average ever since, Thomas says it's not just locals coming to pan anymore.
We see a lot more people out here, a lot more people getting into it.
I head to the local gold shop in Grass Valley, the Gold Digger Exchange, to see if any of the new prospectors are going in there to sell what they find.
Good morning.
Owner Donald Seberg is standing behind glass display counters, full of bullion, jewelry, coins, and nuggets. He picks up a vial of that same sparkling dust that Thomas and Puckett were pulling out of the Yuba.
Yeah, and this is all from the miners, so it's probably a couple $1,000 in gold, so, yeah.
He says that's all just from the last few days, and that with the price so high, he meets new prospectors every week. Mm-hmm.
Some aren't really finding much, some are finding a lot. A lot of people quit and they go back to a real job. It's definitely hard work.
Zeeshan Khan walks into the gold shop. He's a delivery driver from Sacramento, and these days, he's buying gold.
Cash is burned. You know, you can burn it, it's gone, you know, but gold is there. It's physical. It's a mineral. I don't know.
Historically, gold tends to go up in price during times of economic instability. In late January, with global tariff whiplash and domestic inflation, it hit an all-time high of over $5,000 per ounce. Since then, with the conflict in Iran and disrupted trade routes, it's been hovering around 4,000, which is still about double what it was worth 2 years ago. I asked Khan if he started prospecting.
Oh yeah, that's what I feel like doing all the time is go by the rivers and just shove my hand into the sand and see what I can find, you know? You make money. People can make money, you know?
But can they really? Gene Ryan is a parks interpreter over at the Empire Mine State Historic Park.
Most people, when they think of the gold rush, they think of the miners with their pans and their rockers and their sluices. But really, that didn't last very long.
She says the era when people could easily find gold in California's rivers ended just a few years after the gold rush began in 1849. By the early 1850s, the surface gold, the easily accessible stuff, had pretty much all been found. So for today's would-be prospector, heading out to the river with a pan after watching a YouTube video, Ryan doesn't foresee an easy ride.
I don't see those people driving really expensive cars.
Over on the American River, I finally catch one of these elusive newbies in the act. And it's true, he's not in an expensive car.
My name is Camden and I'm 7 years old.
Camden Harbeck is panning for gold with his family. He says he hasn't found much yet, but it's fun.
Tell me why you like gold.
Because it's a lot of money.
Ooh. Let's say if you found someone, you got some money, what would you want?
A Nintendo Switch.
A Nintendo Switch goes for about $200, which is to say about enough gold flakes to cover your pinky fingernail. So by the end of the summer, Camden might just reach his goal. But for the rest of the new prospectors out there, time will tell. For the California Report, I'm Catherine Monaghan.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.